welcome back to another edition of Flying MMA Opinions and News. I am Flying Brian, of course, and on this edition of the show, I will be briefly recapping UFC 184. I'm going to talk about some weird deals that are going on with MMA betting. And then I'm going to bring on a guest, a special guest with me today, Daniel from MMA Thought and also Best Fight Picks, is going to help me preview and look forward to UFC 185. He is a MMA betting guide expert, and so he's going to drop a lot of knowledge on us for what you should do for betting. You know, there's websites such as the MMA Playground where you can use fake Monopoly money type of stuff to bet on fights. Also, counter move type of things. So that's going to be a lot of fun. Thank you for coming along with me. Here we go. We're going to go right into UFC 184 after I tell you that this podcast is proudly brought to you by Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of MMA, raising affordable and healthy bulldogs for the last 30 years. Look him up on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 and also on Instagram, instagram.com/UniqueKennels. If you haven't got your daily dose of cute in yet, go to instagram.com/UniqueKennels to get that in right now. All right, UFC 184, let's start recapping it. I'll give you a grade at the very end, what I thought the grade was for this card, but let's just go starting at featherweight on Fight Pass, the beginning of the night, Maceo Fullen versus Alex Torres. Split decision for Maceo Fullen. This was the only fight that I did not get to see. So we're going to move on to a lightweight fight that was on the prelims between Valmir Lazaro and James Krause. I've met James Krause in person a couple of times, and so I picked him on UFC Pick'em and also on Counter Move, all that type of stuff, because I've met this guy in person. I was picking with my heart and not my head. Bad move. I looked up some film on Valmir Lazaro, and I thought that he had the more dynamic striking attack to James Krause, and that turned out to be correct. Valmir Lazaro got the split decision win over James Krause. Prior to this fight, James Krause was whining that he was on the Fight Pass prelims, but then you lose on the Fight Pass prelims. That's not great for you. It's not looking too well. Moving on to the prelim portion of Fox Sports 1, we had Derek Lewis put out Ruan Potts in the second round. I think it was the first time that either of these guys had made it out of the first round, so that was something. Ruan Potts has lost 3 fights in a row in the UFC. He's probably gone. Derek Lewis, I had him on my counter move team. That worked out pretty well for me. Next up, a welterweight fight between Tim Means and Diego Lima. Tim Means got a performance of the night bonus for putting on a striking clinic against Lima. The Dirty Bird was looking pretty clean on his striking. It's phenomenal. Moving on, we had Roman Salazar versus Norifumi Yamamoto. Went to a no contest because I'm pretty sure it was Yamamoto poked Roman Salazar in the eye. No contest, accidental eye poke. It ended midway through the second round. We're going to move on. We're going to skip a fight and move on to the pay-per-view portion of this card. We had Tony Elkukui Ferguson put an ass-whooping on Gleison Tibau. Gleison Tibau is known as a gatekeeper of the lightweight division, and Tony Elkukui Ferguson blew that gate right open, whooped his ass, got a rear naked choke, finish midway through the first round. Moving on, we had a male model versus filthy Richard Walsh. Alan Joban beat Richard Walsh KO with a dirty, dirty elbow. And then punches follow for the TKO victory at 219 of the first round. That was a welterweight contest. Another welterweight contest between Juggernaut Jake Ellenberger and Josh Koscheck. This fight was, you know, so-so. Both of these guys needed a win badly. I thought that either guy, if they would have lost, would be out of the UFC. They both came into this fight with 3 fight losing streaks. Koscheck hadn't fought in a long time. And I thought that if Koscheck would have beat Ellenberger, Ellenberger would have had to go to Bellator or something. But if Ellenberger would beat Koscheck, I thought the UFC would force Koscheck to retire. But that's not the case. Koscheck is going to face Eric Silva at an upcoming card in Brazil. Yikes. Good luck, Koscheck. Oh, I forgot to tell you who won that fight. Jake Ellenberger got a submission with a north-south choke over Koscheck in the second round. And Jake Ellenberger's from Nebraska. I, Flying Brian, am from Nebraska. I was cheering for Jake Ellenberger, and through the most of the first round, Koscheck was barely trying for a takedown against the cage, and I was yelling at Jake to get the Darce choke. And then in the second round, he finally heard me through the TV somehow, went for the Darce choke. Koscheck went to try to gator roll out of it, and Ellenberger got him in north-south. And then Koscheck thought about tapping, started to foam out the mouth, and then decided to tap. I forget who the ref was for that fight, but the ref was not doing very well for himself there. He could have called it over before we did. Moving on, the co-main event of the evening, I said for a long time before this fight happened that it did not deserve the co-main event spot, and I feel validated in that assumption. Holly Holm beat Raquel Pennington via split decision. Holly Holm was being hyped that if she won convincingly that she could face Ronda Rousey next. Ish, no dice. She was a former boxing champion, but I forget where I saw it on the interwebs. I think, no, Chael Sonnen said it, that, you know, the boxing commissions aren't as strict as the UFC is, so anybody in their backyard could slap a championship on Holly Holm. So we don't know how legit her championship boxing was, but she did not look that great against Raquel Pennington. She got the split decision win, as I said, but she did not look great. Main event of the evening, it took these fighters longer to walk to the cage. It took Bruce Buffer longer to announce this fight than the fight took. Ronda Rousey beat Kat Zingano with an armbar submission that was a really wonky, weird-looking armbar submission at 14 seconds of round number one. Sure, Ronda looked phenomenal. She put an ass-whooping on Kat Zingano, 14 seconds. That's an ass-whooping. Ronda's coach, I think it was her coach, said that she actually won in 12 seconds, like 12.83 seconds, whatever. 14 seconds, round number one. Fast enough for me. It's the fastest finish in a title fight in history. But like I said, Ronda looked great. What I want to focus on is Kat Zingano. That was the worst game plan in MMA history. I could last longer with Ronda Rousey if I'd just ran in a circle. Ronda Rousey is an Olympic judoka. Judokan. Olympic at judo. They use your momentum against you to throw you on the ground. So what does Kat Zingano do? She sprints at her. Great fucking idea. Next, Ronda went for the hip toss, and Kat seemed like she was happy to go to the ground. She went to throw Ronda on her head, too, to take it to the ground. Oh, yeah, great idea. Let's go to the ground with Ronda Rousey, a person who's known for taking arms, putting it in her knapsack, and taking them home with her. Let's do that. Kat cried immediately after and said, let's do this again. And maybe, you know, she could do it again. And this time, I hope she game plans. You know, next time she faces her, I hope that she game plans a little bit better than that. Because that was embarrassing. The game plan was the worst ever. A little bit more on Ronda Rousey. She is set to appear this coming Saturday at a South by Southwest event with Jessica Eye. And maybe they're going to announce that they will fight each other next. I would like to see Betcha Kohea versus Jessica Eye first for a chance to fight Ronda Rousey. Ronda Rousey supposedly is going to be filming a movie coming up, so I'd like to see Jessica Eye fight Betcha Kohea so we can see which one more deserves the chance to lose to Ronda Rousey, because let's be honest, nobody right now in the UFC is going to beat Ronda Rousey. Also, the night before UFC 184, Invicta 11, Chris Cyborg Santos put the hurt on some lady named Sweet Tweet. I've never heard of Sweet Tweet. I don't follow Invicta that much. You know, we can watch on Fight Pass. I'm a Fight Pass subscriber, but I've never heard of Sweet Tweet. Cyborg Santos put her out. I think Cyborg put her out in 46 seconds. Looked pretty scary, but supposedly Cyborg weighed 170 pounds while she was in the cage. And then afterward, she tweeted that she's only 4% body fat, but yet she's saying that she's going to get down to 135 to fight Ronda Rousey. She was actually telling Ronda Rousey to go up to 140, and I saw a lot of people differentiating opinions on this. Ronda should go up. Ronda shouldn't go up because she's the champion. My opinion is no way in hell should Ronda go up to fight a challenger. That's just stupid. If you want to fight the champion, you go to the champion. You know, you're not going to tell a king that you, hey, come down off your throne and talk to me. No, you have to go to the throne to talk to the king. Ronda Rousey's the king of women's MMA right now, and I don't see any reason why she would go up to fight Cyborg Santos. back to my point about 4% body fat as weighing 170, does it seem to you, can you do that math real quick? Does it seem like Cyborg could get down to 135? No. And if she does, she's going to have to lose a lot of muscle mass, and maybe that'll deplete her power. And I think that if that does happen, Ronda's going to break her arm anyway. Now, I skipped one fight on UFC 184, and I'm going to bring in my expert, Daniel, from the MMA Thought. You can find him on Twitter at MMA Thought and also at Best Fight Picks. So let's do it right now. All right, so I just recapped the entire UFC 184 fight card, except for I left one out. And one half of that fight was featuring a man from Atlanta. With me here right now is a man from Atlanta, Daniel, with MMA Thought and Best Fight Picks. What's up, Daniel?
Brian, how's it going?
Good, good. Thanks for being on here. So let's talk about Roan Carneiro versus Mark Munoz. I did not know that Roan was from Atlanta.
Yeah, man. Roan's actually the jiu-jitsu coach out of ATT Atlanta. You know, he's training guys like Douglas Lima, Diego Lima, all those guys.
Oh, so there must have been a few guys from ATT on 184, huh?
Yeah, Gleison Tibau and Hon Carneiro, Hon Juco.
Jukal, that's how you say that?
Yep, Zhukov.
See, I see it a lot on social media, but I did not know how to pronounce it.
It's some Brazilian nickname, man. They got great nicknames, don't they?
Yeah, what does Jukal mean?
You know, honestly, I couldn't tell you, man, but it sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it sounds pretty good. It's not as cool as Sagano, which means the gypsy, but yeah, it's good.
Yep.
So you and I were two of the only guys in the world probably that put money or put Jukal on our countermove team.
Yeah, you know what, Brian? I was actually surprised to hear that not many people were on Zhukao. You know, at plus 250, that definitely seemed like a good line. And not only that, but considering the fact that Mark Munoz has, you know, been on a steady decline lately, I thought that it seemed like a no-brainer to fade him. But I guess many people weren't sure what to expect from Zhukao. But you know, after he had that tournament where he beat three guys in one night, and then returns to the UFC. You know, I think he showed that he's ready to make another run.
I agree with you, and I shared that article with you where the doctor said that he did not want Mark Munoz to fight ever again, and that right there was enough for me to not think Mark Munoz deserved to be the favorite.
It's crazy, man. And you know, in addition to that, the fact that he's fighting Luke Barnett, just to skip forward a little bit, I think you know, if the line's right on Luke, that's a relatively safe play, just in the sense that he's fighting a man with one foot out the door.
Exactly. I was thinking that too. I really hope that Munoz is the favorite on that fight.
Yeah, that'd be nice, wouldn't it?
I think it was you that told me that, Vegas makes the odds, or the people make the odds, and since Mark Munoz is more well known than Barnett, it's possible that he could be the favorite.
Yeah, you never know. You know, you got great odds makers such as Nick Kalikas who set the line, and then the public shifts it in whichever direction they see fit. And for some reason, they thought Munoz was going to dominate Zhukao as the plus 250 underdog mark on Zhukao indicated. But as you saw, he needed, you know, about less than 2 minutes to finish the deal.
Yep, rear naked choke at 140 of the first round.
Yeah, you know something else interesting? I'm pretty sure in Munoz's last three fights, I don't think he's landed a single strike.
Holy crap, that's probably true.
Crazy, right?
Well, no, it can't be in his last three, 'cause didn't he beat? What are his last three fights?
Well, let's see. So he lost to Zhukov, he lost to Musasi, and he lost to Machida. And
Oh,
then
Musasi.
prior to that, his last win was against Tim Boesch at UFC 162. And then right before that was the brutal loss to Weidman.
Dude, that elbow from Weidman was dirty. Ugh.
And man, you know what's crazy too is that prior to that elbow, he was dominating him in the grappling department, which, you know, now obviously we know Weidman's a hell of a grappler. But, you know, back when that fight was happening, everyone thought of Munoz as, you know, a stud wrestler. And Weidman went in there and shut that down.
That fight was for the number one contender spot against Anderson, wasn't it, or some shit like that?
Yeah, it was. And it was pretty funny because Munoz was actually training with Anderson at Black House for a while. And then after that, if you remember, he said, oh, yeah, I'll fight Anderson. And that's when Anderson was like, I don't know about this guy. And then the contender fight with Weidman happened, and we all saw what happened there.
Yeah. Man, I'm going to, as soon as we're done with this podcast here recording, I'm going to go watch that highlight of Weidman throwing that elbow on Munoz.
It's brutal stuff, man.
Super brutal. So we're about to talk about UFC 185. You're going to be the man that helps us put some counter move picks on, put some smart money on it. Can you tell me like what your history is with MMA betting or MMA odds?
Yeah, you know, first and foremost, I'm a huge MMA fan. You know, I started watching the UFC and immediately fell in love. And then I started training mixed martial arts, Muay Thai and Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And one of my buddies is actually a pro poker player. He does a lot of sports betting. So he kind of got me into it. He'd bet on fights here and there. And I saw an opportunity on a Nate Diaz fight. I believe he was fighting Jim Miller. And he was a plus 250 underdog or something crazy like that. And I was like, all right, dude, I'm betting on Nate Diaz right here. And, you know, it cashed. So then, you know, a couple more fights happen. I'd bet an underdog here and there. It would cash. And then I decided, you know what? Why don't I start betting on every event? If I'm going to watch the fights, why not get paid to watch them? And it's pretty funny. I started off and I did a six-man parlay, which,
holy,
you know,
shit.
Any better knows that, you know, the hit rate of those is very, very low. And I actually hit the first one I tried. And I was like, oh, maybe I can do this. And then I tried another one, and it failed miserably. But then I started getting, you know, better with my strategy. And I think I've got something good going now.
It seems as though you do. You helped me with that last one, and I, you know, I'm just playing the MMA Playground money. But, yeah, I'm there with my, I call it Monopoly money. It paid out for me using your advice.
Glad to hear that, man. It's kind of funny because you asked me about how I started, and you know, one of the first picks I did to backtrack on Munoz, and I actually lost this one. It was Chris Lieben versus Mark Munoz, and Chris Lieben, he was a big underdog too, and you know, I was like, okay, he just knocked out Vanderlei Silva in like 27 seconds. I think he's got a good chance against Munoz, and then he comes out and he doesn't answer the bell after the second round. And that was one of those moments where I was like, wow, like, this sport is unpredictable, man. And then you find out he tests positive for painkillers, which it turns out he was actually on during the fight. Pretty
Holy
crazy,
shit.
Right, man?
That is pretty crazy. But as you said, that's one of the things that I love about this sport. Probably one of my favorite things about the sport is it's so unpredictable.
Yeah, man, anything can happen. You know, and another thing is, you know, on paper, you think that one guy's got the edge or one guy's the better fighter, but sometimes that guy won't show up on the night of the fight. So there's so many factors that come into play when you're talking about betting fights.
One more quick thing about that Chris Lieben fight versus Mark Munoz. That was the first ever five-round non-title fight in UFC history. Like you said, it ended after two, but that's pretty interesting.
That's right. That's actually a good point. Yeah, I forgot about that, but yeah, that definitely was.
Birmingham, England. Birmingham, England.
That's actually a great card. If you go back, it's on Fight Pass. Great card. Lots of action on there. I believe Henan Barao defeated Brad Pickett that night. And that was the night we really saw Henan Barao show some championship potential. And man, he was a beast that night against Brad Pickett, huh?
I don't think that I was... I wasn't super into it yet. Super into fighting... You know, like starting way back at Tough One, you know, with Forrest Griffin and stuff, I watched it intermittently, and then only like 2 years ago did I start watching every weekend.
Yeah, man, you know, once you catch that bug, you keep watching every single event. And yeah, Forrest Griffin, he's another Atlanta guy. You know, he started off in Athens, Georgia, but now he currently lives in Atlanta. Great guy.
He lives in Atlanta again? Shit, last I knew he was living in Vegas.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's got multiple homes.
Lucky son of a bitch.
Yeah.
So a little bit more about you before we get into this UFC 185. You've told me a couple of times that you have a gym. What kind of gym do you have?
Well, I train out of Knuckle Up Fitness in Atlanta, and in my opinion, it's the best gym in Atlanta. I know ATT might have something to say about that, but you know, our striking coach is Captain Gary Brown, who, you know, he actually taught Rick Rufus, the brother of Duke Rufus. So, you know, I might be a little bit biased when I talk about Anthony Pettis, just because I know what kind of striking training Duke is putting him through. It's just a next level. And then the jiu-jitsu coach at Knuckle Up is Master Ricardo Mergel, who's a red belt. And there's only about like 8 to 10 red belts on the planet. It's like an 8th degree black belt. Pretty crazy stuff, man. He actually gave Nate Marquardt his black belt.
Damn. This is the first I've ever heard of a red belt. You're teaching me something. This is the second thing you've taught me today.
Yeah, it's an education process, man. I learn something new every day at this gym, and you know, I didn't know that there were red belts either until I started training there.
Damn, someday I hope to get my white belt.
Right, yeah, I feel the same way every single day. You know, every time I train, it's a humbling experience.
My schedule right now with my life, I'm a college student, and also keeping track of this MMA here, it's like a full-time job. I don't feel like I have enough time to train, and there's nothing in my area to do that kind of training. But as soon as I get some time, I promise I'm going to get that white belt.
It's a sacrifice, man. You know, I'm a student as well. I go to Georgia State University. I'm a marketing major on my last year here. And, you know, finding the time to train is tough, but it's dedication. You know, you go to school and then immediately you're in the gym and you got to, you know, sacrifice the time hanging out with friends to do the things that matter most.
Which, yeah, thanks a lot for sacrificing this time to hang out with me for a little while.
It's my pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Okay, let's do this. Let's talk about UFC 185. Do you want to talk a little bit about every single fight and what you think is going to happen?
Let's do it, man.
All right, so starting off the night, we got Germaine de Randamie. I can't pronounce this lady's last name. Versus Larissa Pacheco.
Yeah, so I'm going to keep it short on this one. So de Randamie, she's a European kickboxing champion. And Pacheco, she's more of a well-rounded mixed martial arts fighter. I guess that's the reason why she's the favorite. But I'm not too familiar with both of them, aside from the fact that de Randamie is a kickboxing world champion, and Pacheco is the more well-rounded fighter of the two. So personally, I'm passing on this fight.
It's probably going to go to a decision. I always assume women are going to go to a decision unless it's Ronda Rousey. I know that's probably bad of me, but...
No, I mean, I'm pretty sure the over 2.5 has a high hit rate for the female fights, you know? And I tend to agree with that way of thinking. Unless Ronda Rousey's fighting, man, you know, with her, I don't even know if it goes past 20 seconds.
I think that on her next fight, there's probably going to be prop bets on, you know, less than 2 minutes, like I saw that there were on Conor McGregor because he was calling it out.
Well, you know, it's actually kind of funny because on this one, the last one against Kat Zingano, there were prop bets on if she was going to win between the first second and the first minute, and then the first minute and the second minute, you know, so you can literally pick which minute she was going to win in. And that was actually the first time I've ever seen anything like that.
Man, do you know, was it high odds for the first minute?
Yeah, man. You know, I think at this point, people come to expect that kind of performance out of Rousey, you know, under a minute stoppage. But I don't think anyone thought that she was going to stop Kat in 14 seconds. And, you know, interestingly enough, a lot of people make the case that it was really an 11-second stoppage, but the referee, you know, stopped the fight 2 or 3 seconds late.
Yeah, I saw that afterward they interviewed her coach or some older guy with a stopwatch, and he was showing the camera that it was 12.83 seconds.
Wow, yeah. I think that was that Judo Gene LaBella that had the stopwatch there?
Yeah, probably. Is he an older gentleman?
Yeah. He's an old-school badass, man.
Yeah, he claims that it was 12.83. So.
Hey, I'm not going to argue with that guy. You'll throw me on my head.
So the next fight at UFC 185 is where I'm going to put some playground money on. Jake Lindsey versus Joseph Duffy.
Man, this is a good one because Duffy, he's got a lot of hype around him, and for good reason. You know, obviously, he beat Conor McGregor, but that's not the Conor McGregor we see today. That was Conor McGregor before he had a ground game. But still, to beat Conor McGregor, I mean, that's a big deal. And not only did he beat him, he finished him in about a minute. And then he also finished Norman Park, who, you know, as we've seen, he's a pretty tough guy too. So this guy already has some named victories on his record. And his opponent, Jake Lindsey, you know, I got to say, man, he hasn't been that impressive in the UFC. He tapped out to, I believe, heel strikes from back mount. Now, I've never seen that before, man. So I'm pretty confident with Duffy winning inside the distance here.
Yeah, me too. Are you betting? Are you putting some on the prop bet for that?
Let's check the line real quick on that. Duffy wins inside the distance is -130. That's not bad at all, dude. And I think, you know, for a small play, why not?
For sure. Have you ever played UFC Pick'em?
I have, actually. Yeah, I'm on there. Last year, at one point, I was number 23 in the world. But then, you know, one of those events where all the underdogs win totally screwed me over. But, yeah, I'm still there. I'm not giving up, and I'm coming for that number one spot.
Are you in the flying squad for that?
I believe I'm not, so you should totally send me an invitation, man.
Yeah, I'll send you a link. And also to anyone listening, if you find me on Twitter, I am at FlyingMMA if you don't already know that, and I'll get you a link to get into the UFC Pick'em game. Up until the fight card not too long ago, what was it, 61? UFC Fight Night 61, where all the underdogs won?
Man, crazy night, huh?
Up until that point, I was in the top 100 in the world for this year.
Nice, dude. Do you know how many users use that by chance? Like, is it 20,000 or 10,000?
I think it's something like 20,000.
Wow, yeah, top 100, man. That's pretty good.
The first two fight cards this year, I think I missed one total fight.
Not bad, yeah. I like how they have an option where you can go ahead and do the upcoming events. So in case you forget one, you know, you just do it all at once. But the only thing with that is, you know, the injuries and, you know, last-minute replacements and stuff like that. So you just got to be on top of that.
Yeah, we'll touch on that when we get to Johnny Big Rig versus Matt Brown.
That's a good one, man.
Fuck, I changed my pick just like Tuesday because of something that I saw on the interwebs for that fight.
Yeah, man, I can't wait to hear what that is.
So, Joseph Duffy, anyway, my point was with Pick'em. I'm putting Joseph Duffy first round submission win over Jake Lindsey on Pick'em.
Go for it, man. Yeah, I think Duffy's going to win by stoppage, whether it's a sub or a knockout. You know, I think he's going to finish Jake Lindsey. And, you know, something interesting, you know, he is an Irish fighter, and he's actually training at a TriStar with Faraz Zahabi. That's a great camp. And so he actually took some time off from the sport, about 3 years. But in that time, he went to professional boxing, and he actually compiled a 7-0 record. So it's not like Yeah, it's not like he's been sitting on his couch. You know, he's been training hard, man. And I think he's going to make a statement in his UFC debut.
I agree. And I hope that he sometime gets closer to rematching with Conor McGregor, just because the hype for that would be out of this world.
Yeah, no doubt about it, man. And if they both keep winning, I guarantee you we'll see that fight one day.
But this fight is happening at 155. Do you think that he would go back down?
Yeah, and, you know, if he doesn't, Conor has expressed many times that he wants to go back to 55. So either way, 45 or 55, I do foresee them meeting in the future.
God, that'd be sweet. One last thing with this fight, and then we'll try to move on with the card. I love talking about MMA nicknames, and here we have the Librarian versus the Irish Joe.
Yeah, I'm going to guess that Jake was a librarian before he started fighting.
That's such a weird deal. Fucking go from reading books to beating heads.
But you know what? I got to go with the Irish Joe on this one.
Absolutely. He's even a better nickname. Let's move on to a guy that looks exactly like one half of the main event. Sergio the Phenom Pettis versus Ryan Babyface Benoit.
Is it Benoit or is it Benoit? I keep hearing different things.
Well, it's spelled the same as the crazy bastard that used to be in the WWE, Chris Benoit. All
right, let's go with that, man. Benoit.
Yeah, I mean, who knows, though? I have no idea. So we can call it whatever we want. No one's going to tell us not to.
That's right.
I'm also playing Sergio. I'm putting Joseph Duffy as one of the three men on my... I'm doing a three-fight parlay with my MMA playground money, and then I'm also putting Sergio Pettis.
Yeah, man, I definitely think Sergio is going to win this fight. You know, Benoit, he's an aggressive guy. He's got some good Muay Thai. He comes forward, but the problem I've seen in his fights is that he gives up position a lot. He's very happy to give up his back, and he gets tired, man. He gets real tired. So I expect him to come out real strong, fade as the fight goes on. And I'll tell you what, man, Sergio Pettis is a little technician. This little dude, he evolves every single fight, and he's got some pinpoint striking. And I think as he evolves and gets a little bit older, you might start seeing him have some championship potential. So I got to go with Sergio all the way on this one, and I even think that this might be his first finish.
Oh, I was just going to say, I was picking Sergio by decision because that seems to be the route he takes. But you're going to pick him by finish.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the decision wouldn't surprise me one bit because that's what he's been doing lately. But like I said, man, I think he's evolving every single fight. You know, in the last fight against Hobart, he put a whooping on that dude until he got taken down. And I'm not going to be surprised if he drops Benoit and gets a sub or pounds him out for the referee stoppage.
Are you looking at the prop bets right now? What's Sergio finishing the fight? What's the odds on that?
Well, Pettis, Sergio wins inside the distance is actually plus 109. So that might be worth a small stab. And Pettis wins by decision is plus 152. So they're both plus money, man. So, you know, both worth a stab.
Yeah, both worth a stab. I don't see why not. You choose one of those. Son of a bitch. So at the end of us previewing this fight card, I want you to give us your best shot at getting some money on the card.
Will do, man.
Unless you want to charge us, you can do that too if you want. All right, going for free. Moving on to a heavyweight fight between Jared the Big Show Rosholt and Josh Cuddly Bear Copeland.
Yeah, you know, Jared Rosholt, man, he's a stud wrestler. But his biggest problem in MMA is that he tries to keep fights standing when, you know, this guy's a wrestler. And, man, his chin is not very good. You know, I believe Derek Lewis knocked him out. And obviously in his last fight, Olenek knocked him out. So, you know, it's a matter of strategy with this guy. If he comes out and wrestles Copeland, you know, I see him winning the decision. But if he tries to stand and bang for his ego, I see Copeland getting a knockout victory. So I'm personally passing on this fight, but, you know, I could see a potential upset here.
I'm picking the upset just on my UFC pick'em, but yeah, I'm not putting either of these guys in my countermove team, even though it's likely that a heavyweight fight ends early. I'm just not confident in either man.
Yeah, I feel you on that, and I'm definitely passing on this one. I see routes to victory for both. So, you know, it's a matter of, is Rosholt going to come in there, play it smart, grind out the decision, or is he going to stand and bang and, you know, possibly get knocked out by the very hard hitter? And, you know, Copeland, he actually trains in Denver at a Grudge with Trevor Whitman, who's a great striking coach. So, you know, this guy's got some hands on him.
I think his last victory was a KO, if I'm not mistaken.
He knocks dudes out in brutal fashion, but obviously Rosholt's a step up in competition. You know, his last fight against Magomedov, even though he was getting, you know, picked apart all three rounds, he stuck it out, man. He's a tough guy.
And what a nickname, the Cuddly Bear. He wins the battle of nicknames in this fight.
Yeah, no doubt about that.
Another pretty cool nickname, Darren the Detroit Superstar Crookshank versus Beniel Dariush. I think we've already talked about that. Dariush might be the best underdog on the card.
This is a good fight, man. You know, Benny Dariush, this kid is talented. You know, he's got unbelievable jiu-jitsu, and his striking is getting better, too. In his last fight with Diego Ferreira, you know, he went to the ground with Diego, and Diego is a high-level black belt. He's a world champion jiu-jitsu guy. And Beneil Dariush had zero problems there. And on top of that, his striking looked much improved. He's training with Master Rafael Cordero, so you know his striking is getting better every single day. He's sparring with guys like Rafael Dos Anjos, who, you know, is fighting Pettis in the main event. So having a guy like that as your training partner, it only helps you get better every single day. In addition to that, he's training with Fabricio Werdum on the ground. So, you know, I see an upset here, man. I think Beny Dariush is going to take this. And with Crookshank is that, you know, he's solid all around, but I don't think that he's necessarily that great, whereas I see something very special in Beny Dariush. So I'm going with the upset here, Beny Dariush.
Me too, but only on Pick'em. I'm not putting any of my playground money on Dariush. He has, like you said, a ton of potential. Are you putting, you know, a unit on Dariush?
Actually, for best fight picks, we're putting two units on Dariush. We got it at plus 130. Right now on Five Dimes, I'm looking at it, it's plus 120. But if you have an account with Bookmaker, you can get that plus 130 line right now.
I have an account with like I said, the MMA Playground, and I think that the odds right there for them is only plus 115. So it might not be worth it for me to put units on that. What do you think?
Personally, I mean, I think he's definitely worth a shot here. You know, I think we know what to expect with Crookshank. He
spinning shit.
Yeah, you know, he likes to throw his sidekicks and stuff like that. But Crookshank showed that if you pressure this guy, man, he'll break. So I really think if Dariush, if he can transition the striking to the takedowns and, you know, use his high-level jiu-jitsu, I think he can win this fight impressively.
All right, I'll go with you on that one. Let's move on to Elias Theodoro versus Hodger Silverback Narvaez.
Man, you know what? Narvaez surprised a lot of people in his last fight with Luke Barnett. He came out, dropped him, and he won that fight pretty convincingly in my mind. I know it was a split decision, but I definitely scored that fight for Narvaez. And he's also fighting in Texas where he's from, so he will have that home field advantage for whatever that counts for. But Theodoro, man, that kid's a stud. That kid's got some serious wrestling, some serious pressure, and he's getting better every single fight. So as far as parlays are concerned, I think that Theodoro is a good pick to put in your parlays.
All right. Yeah, I wouldn't pick against him. I hope that he loses because he's just too damn pretty, but yeah, I'm not going to pick against him.
Yeah, man, I see him either dominating a 30-27, 30-26 decision or possibly even getting a late TKO stoppage.
Calling a 30-26 before it happens, that's gutsy. No, did I say 30-26? Yeah, that's gutsy.
Yeah, man, he's dominant, dude. And as we saw against when Narvaez fought Cummins, man, if you put a lot of pressure on this guy, you know, he'll give up, and that's not a sign we want to see. You know, there's a reason I like guys like Frankie Edgar a lot. If you recall the Graham Maynard fights, he gets dropped like 3-4 times, and then he comes back and knocks him out. I mean, that's championship heart. That's something you can't teach, and I don't want to disrespect Narvaez, but in my personal opinion, I don't think he has that championship heart. So that's why I'm going with Theodoro here.
Good insight. Let's get some of that good insight on Ross the Real Deal Pearson versus Sam Hands of Stone Stout.
Now, this is a crossroads fight for both guys. Both guys are coming off brutal knockout losses, but at this point in their careers, I think that Ross Pearson is still improving as a fighter, whereas Sam Stout, he's definitely peaked out a little bit, man. But you know what? When you get two strikers in there, anything can happen. One shot on the chin, either guy can go out, but I got to lean with Ross Pearson here, man. You know, both guys have totally rounded out their game. You know, you saw Sam Stout use some wrestling in some of his past fights, but I just think that Ross Pearson's been fighting the higher level of competition. I think he's a little bit better, and I see him either winning by decision or by a late TKO.
Do you think these two are going to stand and bang?
Yeah, they're definitely going to come out and slug it out. But you never know. If one of them gets hit really hard, he might turn into a wrestler. But I definitely see them trading strikes and try to see who's the more dominant striker.
If I was Sam Stout, I think that I would put a little bit of game plan to try to not stand with Ross Pearson, because I feel like Stout's chin has been more depleted than Pearson's. Even though Pearson got knocked out in his last fight, I feel like Pearson has more chin than Stout.
Yeah, I won't disagree with you. You know, Stout got knocked out in 30 seconds in his last fight, too. And he definitely looks way more faded. You know, ever since the tragic passing of his coach, Sean Tompkins, he hasn't looked the same, man. And Pearson is evolving. You know, he had that fight with Iaquinta, and he wasn't looking that bad until he got knocked out. I think Iaquinta is just, you know, he's the younger, fresher guy, the more new breed kind of fighter. But I think Ross Pearson's a good fighter, and I see him winning this fight.
I agree that he will win, but do you think that he deserves to be minus 380? I mean, that's pretty large.
I personally don't. I think it's a little bit closer than the line indicates. However, I'm not willing to take a shot on the dog here. I'm just going to pass this fight altogether.
All right, next fight. I think that the next fight's going to take us to, the main card portion where you have to pay to see it. I'm going to go to a bar to see it. We've got Chris Kamikaze Carriasso versus Henry the Messenger Cejudo.
Man, I'm pumped about this one, dude, because Henry Cejudo, or Cejudo, however you want to pronounce it, dropping the flyweight. You know, it's kind of funny. They came out with a line, whether he's going to make weight or not. I think that's pretty hilarious. But you know what? I think he's going to make weight, and I think he's going to put on a seriously impressive performance. If you saw him fight Dustin Kimura last,
yeah,
he whooped that dude. He whooped his ass. So I personally see him doing the same thing to Carriasso. I think even though he's dropping a weight class, his speed's still going to be good. You know, people talk about his Olympic wrestling, but this guy is also a Golden Gloves boxer. So he's got some hands on him, man, and I see him being more well-rounded than Carriasso, and I see him cruising to a 30-27 decision.
Wow, what a pedigree. What a shelf of trophies this guy. He's an Olympic wrestler and a Golden Gloves boxer. I did not know that.
Yeah, dude, like that's kind of unheard of, right?
I knew that he was an Olympic wrestler. I did not know about the Golden Gloves boxing. Holy shit.
It's crazy, man, because, you know, usually you get these guys who, you know, they got a high level of wrestling, but they really need to work on their striking. Or they got a high level of striking and then really need to work on their wrestling. But this guy, he's got it all, man. And, you know, I see championship potential in this guy. I think Cejudo versus DJ in the future will be a very good fight. So I see him cruising past Carriasso.
I hope that he can eventually challenge DJ, because there's only one person in my mind that could possibly even come close to beating DJ at this weight class, and that's John Dodson, and we've already seen it.
Man, Dodson's a stud. I'm excited to see him face Makovsky.
Out of the blue, who are you picking in that fight?
Oh, Dodson by knockout, man. All day.
Even though I have a little bit of favor in my heart for Makovsky because he came from the RFA, which started in my hometown.
Yeah, you know, Makovsky is a cool guy. He's a good fighter, but, you know, I got to go with Dodson on that one. The only question mark would be that he's had a serious layoff, dude. The last time we saw him was forever ago. I believe it was when he fought John Moraga, and that was a long time ago, man. But regardless, you know, he's in a great camp with Jackson's, and I think he's going to come out prepared to make a statement. You know, he's hungry, and I think he's going to knock out Zach Makovsky.
All right. This next fight, I think that we'll see a knockout. We've got Alistair the Ream Overeem versus Roy Big Country Nelson. I think that you're going to play this fight too.
Absolutely. You know, when the line first came out, it was actually closer to what it is right now, but a couple days later, it went to plus 200 for Nelson, and we had best fight picks. That's when we gave out our two-unit play on Roy Nelson. You know, I think Roy Nelson's going to come out and knock out Alistair Overeem. Overeem, since, you know, in his debut against Brock Lesnar, he looked like an absolute killer. But then he tested positive for a 16-1 testosterone ratio or something crazy like that.
Crazy.
And he hasn't looked the same since, man. You know, in his last fight with Struve, She was absolutely scared to stand with Struve. And you've seen Struve get knocked out in under a minute more than once. And Alistair Overeem, who's a K1 champion, he was scared to stand with Struve. And he desperately shot for a takedown, and he won the fight. But against Nelson, man, if you're scared to stand with that guy and you can't take him down, all it takes is one punch. And against Overeem, it's not going to take that big of a punch. I truly believe a glancing blow will knock out Overeem. And I got to go with Roy Nelson here for the upset. 2 units on him. And, you know, just to point out a couple stats, Alistair Overeem has been knocked out 9 times in MMA competition, 3 times in kickboxing competition, and I don't even know how many times in practice. So, and with a chin like that, I'm going with Big Country Nelson by knockout.
Yeah, that dynamite. Yeah, I saw earlier, I watched a video with Roy Nelson where they talked about Alistair has been knocked out 9 times in MMA. I did not know about the 3 in kickboxing, but 12 times being knocked out, that's a whole bunch, dude.
Crazy, man. And, you know, also moved his camp to ATT, so, you know, he's putting in some serious hard work, and I think he's going to be ready to go, man.
Did you know that Roy Nelson, before he started fighting, was an elementary school teacher?
Is that right?
He said that he liked to teach between second and, like, fourth grade.
Nice, man. I know Aljamain Sterling and Cody Gibson. Those two guys have actually fought. They're both. I know Aljamain Sterling is a teacher, and Cody Gibson, I think he was a substitute teacher as well. So, you know, we got Roy Nelson, the teacher. We got Jake Lindsay, the librarian. Pretty crazy, man.
How would you like to get a detention in Roy Nelson's class?
Does it come with one punch?
It probably does, yeah. Back in the 70s it would, I'm sure.
Yeah, man, I definitely don't want to get detention by that guy. I think this weekend Overeem's about to get detention, man.
Oh, good one.
I think you should add Roy Nelson to your counter move teams and put some money on him.
I've got 1 unit on him on my MMA playground, and I also have him on my counter move team. I picked him first round knockout on my UFC pick'em.
Nice, man. And, you know, right now the line actually, it got way closer. It's about plus 165 for Nelson. And it was, you know, plus 200 like I mentioned earlier. But I think tomorrow when the weigh-ins happen and you see them side by side, you know, you got the Danish Hercules versus the Fat Boy. So hopefully the public sees that and they put more money on Overeem, and then we get a better line on Nelson.
I never thought of that. Good call. Man, you're a thinker. I saw that in the video where I talked about he was a teacher and also about the 9 KOs of Ream. Roy Nelson was looking pretty trim.
Yeah, man, I really think his work at ATT is going to pay off. You know, I saw Dustin Poirier put out a tweet that Roy Nelson's been putting in some hard work. And, you know, guys don't just give guys props and credit like that unless it's true. So I truly believe that he's been putting in the work, and you can see it. I think he's slowed down a bit. Not that that makes a difference with his knockout power, but I think he's going to come out and knock out over him.
God, I hope so.
If he can't knock out over him, he'll gas out and lose a 3-round decision. But my thing is that in 15 minutes, that's a long time to not get hit one time in a fist fight. Wouldn't you agree with me, Brian?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I got to go with the dog here.
I feel like Roy Nelson kind of telegraphs that big bomb of his, but like you said, just one time in 15 minutes, he's bound to land one of them.
Yeah, one time.
I was doing some research before we started this podcast, and I saw a lot of people that are saying that they think that Johnny Hendricks has lost his knockout power and that there's no way he will be able to put Matt Brown out, which is our next fight.
Well, you know, even though I love Matt Brown, I disagree with those people. I think that Johnny Hendricks has the type of knockout power. If he hits anyone in the world right, he's going to knock them out. I don't care if it's, you know, if it's someone with the best chin or if it's a rhino, it doesn't matter who it is. If he touches right, he'll put you out. But the fact is, he hasn't been knocking guys out. He's been fighting guys at a way higher level of competition. You know, the last couple of guys he knocked out were guys on their way out. You know, John Fitch, TJ Wahlberger, Martin Kampman. It was good fighters, but at the very end of their careers. And I think that Matt Brown, right now, isn't his peak. This guy is looking better than ever. You know, everyone thought that Robbie Lawler was just going to come in and knock him out in 30 seconds. And then he comes out and has five rounds of the year with now champion Robbie Lawler. So I don't think people should be counting out Matt Brown here. He's plus 315. I mean, can it get any better odds than that?
Not if you're going to put money on the guy. That's pretty fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm definitely in the minority here thinking that he has a good chance for the upset. I know everyone's very high on Johnny, and you know he seems to be taking this fight seriously and stuff. But you know, here's one of my things, man. So he was champion, and he didn't have his diet right, and all of a sudden now he has his diet right. I mean, Matt Brown's in shape year-round, dude. This isn't a one-time thing for him. You know, he's always training hard. So, you know, I do question Johnny's motivation a little bit. I do question his work ethic. He's a very talented guy, unbelievable wrestler, unbelievable knock power, and he does have the tools to win this fight. But at the current price and with all the questions surrounding Johnny Hendricks, I'm taking a stab on the dog.
I alluded to this earlier, but for a while I was picking Matt Brown. And on my UFC Pick'em team, I picked Matt Brown by decision, and I even had him on my counter move team for a brief minute. But I saw a picture that was tweeted out at the beginning of last week of Johnny Hendricks, and he was looking more cut than I've ever seen Johnny Hendricks before. And it was 2 weeks before, you know, the official weigh-in, when dudes normally look their most cut. And that changed my mind to go back and pick Johnny Hendricks, because I feel like he's finally taking this weight cutting thing seriously. Before, he said that he would blimp up to 220 when he wasn't in a fight camp, and the dude is supposed to be the 170-pound champion. And this cutting that much in a couple of 3 months or whatever, even if you know it's the last day type of thing, you're cutting that last 15 to 20 water weight, whatever, I still don't think that it was very smart of him to be blimping up that far when you're supposed to be the 170-pound champion. But I think that this time he's finally taking the shit seriously, because he looked really good in the picture that I saw.
You know, man, it's crazy because, you know, when he had Mike Dolce, who's the, you know, the nutrition guru, that's when he was having all his trouble making weight. But now he's not doing it with Dolce, and he's apparently in the best shape of his life. So it's pretty ironic, no doubt about it. But, you know, I think it has to do with his habits in the off season, and you know what he does when he, you know, between fights and stuff like that. And yeah, I think we're really going to have to see what happens tomorrow at the weigh-ins. You know, we'll see how easy that cut really was. But I can tell you this, Matt Brown is focused, and he's not a guy you want to count out in a fist fight.
The dude truly is immortal. I mean, I know not truly, but kind of, dude. You know, Ruthless hit him with some big stuff. Eric Silva got him right in the liver, and he just was like, ah, that hurt, and then got up and whooped his ass. The dude's nickname really fitting.
You know, it really is, man. And, you know, he's been through it all, man. You know, he had that drug overdose, which he overcame back in the day. Then he had that three-fight losing streak, where he was losing to guys that aren't even in the UFC anymore, guys that he's absolutely murder now. But you know what? He said, fuck it. He kept going, and he put on a 7-fight win streak against, you know, some pretty good fighters, Wonderboy, Eric Silva, Jordan Meehan, and then he has a 5-round fight of the year with the current welterweight champion. And I know I'm in the minority here, but I'll go as far as saying that he put up a better fight against Robbie than Johnny did the last time. You know, Matt was fighting till the very bitter end. Matt was fighting till the bitter end, and Johnny, you know, as Joe Silva said, you can't win a fight with your head between a man's legs. So I think in the championship round, I really think Matt Brown shined. Now, this is a 3-round fight, so that makes it really interesting. But we've seen Hendricks in a 3-round fight with good strikers before. The Connick fight comes to mind. Now, the first 2 rounds of that fight, Hendricks came out and looked like a stud with his wrestling. But, man, that third round, Condit put it on him, dude. And when you put pressure on Hendricks, he doesn't like it. He doesn't like getting teed off on. And guess what? Matt Brown is the kind of guy that will tee off on you. So I'm not convinced that Hendricks is going to win this fight, and that's why I'm going with the underdog here.
And how many units did you say?
Currently, we haven't released that play yet, but for the public that's listening, go ahead and put one unit on Matt Brown. Now, here's a really good play that I like, though, on this fight. The Matt Brown points handicap, the line was better earlier, but currently it's plus 105. And what that means, the points handicap is plus 3.5. It's kind of like a spread. So the way it works is all he has to do is win one round in this fight and obviously, you know, not get knocked out. If it goes to decision, all he has to do is win one round in the fight and you win the bet, plus 105 for the points handicap. Put two units on that.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm going to have to do that. That sounds like a great play.
Yeah, man, I think that's the way to go. And, you know, hopefully tomorrow at the weigh-ins, the line gets even better because, you know, Johnny's going to be looking ripped.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Man, you're dropping a lot of good knowledge on us.
My pleasure, man.
Ready to move on to the co-main event?
Let's do it.
All right, we've got Carla the Cookie Monster Esparza versus Joanne Jedrzejczyk. Joanna Jedrzejczyk. Do you know how to say this lady's last name?
I think, but I could be wrong. I think it's Jedrzejczyk. But
yeah,
I mean,
that's
let's
exactly
just call her,
what it looks like.
Let's just call her Joanna.
All right, yeah. Carla versus Joanna. Are you playing this one at all?
I'm skipping this fight. I'm just going to watch it and enjoy it. But here's what I think about it, man. So Carla Esparza. She's a great wrestler. Joanna, she's a great striker. Classic striker versus grappler. This is going to come down to who implements their game plan. Now, in Joanna's last fight against Gadelia, she got taken down seven times. Seven times. That's a lot of takedowns to give up. Now, on the flip side, she dropped Gadelia like two times. So it's going to come down to what do the judges favor more? Do they favor knockdowns or do they favor takedowns? Now, against Esparza, she's a stud wrestler, but if you saw on the show when she fought Tisha Torres, she was really struggling for that takedown, man. She was desperately looking for that takedown. So if Joanna has improved her takedown defense at all and she can keep this fight standing, I can see an upset. However, if she can't stuff the takedowns, it's going to be a very, very long fight for her. And for that reason, I'm passing this fight.
Let's pretend for a second that you are Daniel the judge. What do you favor more, the takedown or the knockdown?
The knockdown all day. Unless they do a big takedown, it lands serious ground and pound. But if it's just a takedown to stall out the end of the round, kind of like what Johnny did to Robbie in that last fight, I favor the knockdowns all day because you're causing damage, and that's what a fight's all about.
I agree, and I wish that the unified rules for judging included damage in the verbiage, but it does not.
It doesn't, but you know what? They're getting better about it. You remember how the judges gave the fight to Robbie, who landed more damage than Johnny?
Yeah.
So I think the judges are getting better about that. So we'll have to see how it plays out, man.
I picked Carla via bump and grind.
Yeah. I mean, I can totally see that too, man. I can see her laying on Joanna for five rounds, maybe even getting a submission finish. It can really go either way. I see paths to victory for both, and I'm personally passing that fight.
Good call. All right, it's time for the main event of the evening, and I like to ask people what the people's main event is, and I think that this is both the people's main event and the actual main event on the card. How do you feel about that?
No question about that. I mean, Showtime Pettis, what can you say about this guy? He's an absolute phenom. I was telling my buddy, you know, who else jumps off the cage and kicks guys in the head? And he actually laughed at me, but the way I see it is, man, you know, guys in the practice room don't do that, let alone kind of a title fight.
And he's done it multiple times. He has the Showtime kick against Smooth Benson, and then he landed a knee off the cage against Donald the Cowboy Cerrone in the UFC. That shit's crazy.
That was absolutely insane. Like, one doesn't simply style on Donald Cerrone in the stand-up department. You don't just kick that guy's ass in under 2 minutes. And he not only did that, he TKO'd him with a liver shot. And, I mean, that liver shot sounded like a baseball bat, man, like a fucking grand slam. So I got to go with Pettis here. Now, RDA, this dude has made some serious improvements. He's not the same fighter he once was. You know, I remember when he came into the UFC and he fought Tyson Griffin and, you know, he had that amazing leg compression on him and you could see that the kid was talented. But ever since he started training with Rafael Cordero, he's taken his game to a new level, man, knocking out Benson Henderson and, you know, beating up Nate Diaz. But I think that what we see with Pettis is what we saw with Anderson Silva, or what we saw with Jose Aldo, what we saw with John Jones. He's that new breed. He's that next level. I think he's really going to show off this time, man. And everyone thinks that his striking is the best part of his game, and it very well may be. But, dude, if you take this guy down, I mean, his jiu-jitsu game is ridiculous. As a blue belt, he submitted Benson Henderson, who was a black belt, with an armbar. You don't just – one doesn't simply submit Benson Henderson with an armbar. So I think
– off your back.
Showtime. Yeah, dude. I think Showtime is too well-rounded, too dynamic, too next level, and I think he's going to finish RDA. So what I'm doing with this fight is I put two units on Pettis inside the descent, and I put one unit on this fight ending under 2.5 rounds for best fight picks.
Sounds good to me. I have Pettis, and as I said before, Duffy on my three-man parlay for the MMA playground.
Yeah, man. Sounds good to me. I mean, they all sound like they're going to win.
My what I think is going to happen in the fight is I think that RDA is going to try to close the distance on Pettis, kind of like Gilbert did. You know, that seems like a good idea to do against Pettis. His strikes come at ranges. But Rafael's going to tire himself out, and I think that Pettis gets the pretty submission victory in the third round.
Yeah, man, I can totally see it. And you know what? RDA is much improved, and he's going to come out there strong. He's going to look to strike. But the thing is, once you start striking with Anthony Pettis, it's a different ballgame, man. You turn into a wrestler. You don't mean to be a wrestler at first, but once you start striking with this guy, I mean, it's just a whole new game. And I think RDA is going to realize that, man. And, you know, if Anthony Pettis weren't around, maybe RDA could be champion right now because he's that good. But, man, Pettis is that next level, so I got to go with him all day. And another thing I want to point out is if you remember that RDA versus Guida fight, you remember how RDA got his jaw broken and after that he had a titanium jaw?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So a lot of people are like, well, he can't be knocked out, man. He's got a titanium jaw. And my answer to that is go watch the RDA versus Gleison Tibau fight. This was after the Guida fight, and he already had the titanium jaw. And Gleison Tibau rocked this dude and had him on wobbly legs. Now, Gleison Tibau isn't known for knocking dudes out, so I can only imagine what Pettis is going to do when he lands on that chin. Now, obviously, RDA has improved leaps and bounds since that fight. I don't hold too much stock into that. However, as Conor McGregor says, the chin doesn't recover. So I really think Anthony is going to find that chin, man, and close the night.
That's a good, good, good pick. I want to touch on that real fast with the iron jaw thing. I know we talk about a fighter's chin. It's just their proverbial chin. This chin, to me, is their ability to absorb damage and not have their lights shut off. You know, having an iron jaw does not affect your brain rattling around inside your skull. So that's stupid.
Yeah, man, I couldn't have said it better myself. Like, and as we pointed out earlier, Overeem is a prime example of someone with a weak chin.
Yeah, and it's not, I know I talk to my my friends all the time that aren't actual super fans or hardcore MMA fans, and I say chin, and they think that I mean their literal chin. But no, it's just an attribute.
Absolutely, man. It's your ability to take a punch. So, for example, Frankie Edgar, man, that dude can take a punch. You know what I mean? But, yeah, unfortunately for RDA, I do think he can take a punch, but I'm not sure if he can take a punch from Pettis or a head kick, you know? I don't think many people on this earth can.
I'm going to go with the same exact pick as you, but instead of that huge punch or kick from Tony Pettis putting RDA out, he's going to knock him down and then, you know, in typical Tony Pettis or Cowboy Cerrone style, get the submission off of a strike, you know, rocking them.
I can see it, man. I mean, his jiu-jitsu game is absolutely incredible, so I can absolutely see it.
So pretty. So we've done the whole card here. What are your best individual bets for this card? Well, I know we've went over them already, but recap it real fast.
All right, so I'm doing underdog plays on Benny Dariush, Roy Nelson, and then the points handicap on Matt Brown, the +3.5. and then Pettis wins the fight inside the distance, and Pettis versus RDA goes under 2.5 rounds.
All right, I'm going to get on that, putting that money on my MMA Playground money. I advise everyone that has been listening to this excellent expert recap by Daniel from the MMA Thought and also Best Fight Picks to do exactly the same. Thanks a lot for being on the show with me tonight, buddy.
Brian, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it.
We'll be in touch, and we'll probably have to do this again sometime.
Hell yeah, I'd love to.
Later, man.
All right, man. You have a good one.
You too. And Flying Squad, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Flying MMA Opinions and News. Remember, this episode of the podcast was proudly brought to you by Unique Kennels, the official bulldog of MMA. Look him up on Twitter at UniqueKennels71 and also on Instagram, Instagram.com/UniqueKennels. You haven't got your daily dose of cute in yet? Go to that Instagram.com/UniqueKennels and get it in right now. Namaste.